Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. Our top story for today's show is that a proposal for drone testing over East County has been shot down. The Federal Aviation Administration has announced that its choice of six states to test unmanned drone aircraft does not include San Diego. Despite San Diego being home to drone manufacturers and having the support from all five San Diego supervisors and our congressional representatives, the sites chosen for drone testing are Alaska, Nevada, New York, North Dakota, Texas, and Virginia. The FAA said factors considered include geography, climate, ground infrastructure location, research needs, airspace use, safety, aviation experience, and risk. The news drew cheers from citizens groups opposed to drone testing in East County, but disappointment from military and economic development interests here. The San Diego Regional Economic Development Corporation and the San Diego Military Advisory Council had proposed testing drones across a vast flight area from China Lake to Edwards Air Force Base, west to the Pacific Ocean and south to the Mexican border, a region that would have encompassed mountain and desert areas across East County. Larry Bloomberg, executive director of the San Diego Military Advisory Council, called the decision by the FAA bad news for California, adding that the economic impact would have been great. He noted that San Diego had a wide variety of geographic terrains and is home to Northrop Grumman and General Atomics, companies with drones that have been deployed in Afghanistan and Iraq. Congressman Duncan Hunter, who represents East County, had also supported the proposal. He said San Diego has all the talent and capability to ensure any future use of unmanned platforms is safe and properly regulated. And he told UT San Diego via email that it's hard to see how San Diego's assets and resources did not put the region at the top of the list. But Dave Patterson with Veterans for Peace hailed the decision. Currently, there is no judicial oversight regarding the use of drone technology or the sensor information collected by drones, he told East County Magazine. The prospect of our skies being open to thousands of drones exacerbates that problem. Drones in our skies present a threat to our privacy, a risk from fire, and provide a vehicle for the government's surveillance programs that the residents of Southern California do not need, he added. Veterans for Peace plans to celebrate the announcement while keeping up pressure for drone regulations by holding a rally outside General Atomics, a drone manufacturer in Poway, on Thursday at 3:30. And now we have Lisa Elkins on the phone. Lisa is an organizer with Backcountry Voices, a Julian-based group that has been leading opposition to the drones. Lisa, what's your reaction upon hearing that San Diego has not been selected as a drone testing site?
Well, I'm glad in one respect that it isn't a drone testing site, just because, you know, California had the opportunity to pass bills, you know, through legislation to secure privacy and safety issues, and they neglected to do so. So it's not, we're not against drones, you know, the drone in and of itself. It's the fact that they neglected, the FAA and Congress neglected to pass any kind of legislation to protect our privacy. That was our major issue all along. And had they done so, I think it would be a different story.
Yeah. What about the issues of noise and fire danger that were also raised at some of the meetings?
Those are always going to be concerns of ours. And what struck me, you know, is that the title of it, drone testing site. Testing, to me, means trial and error, right?
Yeah.
We're going to test this out. And because it's new technology, there are no laws in place. And so the whole idea of a drone testing site is to, you know, kind of test the waters, you know, through the hobbyists, through commercial organizations, private and government entities, to basically form laws as a result of what happens. And that doesn't feel very secure to us.
Do you believe that this decision may have been influenced by the fairly substantial outcry that was raised here between the groups that were protesting in front of the drone manufacturing companies and your group that was holding public meetings and really getting the word out to the media about these concerns?
Well, I think ultimately it was the fact that they hadn't passed any kind of legislation to protect their privacy. I think that is the main issue. What we did is we brought attention to that issue. Because, you know, there's been very little to no public input. The San Diego County Board of Supervisors, all five of them unanimously passed, they recognized, you know, the drone testing site and gave their full endorsement without acknowledging that they don't really know what's being tested. They saw the dollar signs without being able to address or answer any of the concerns around safety and privacy. And by her own admission, Diane Jacob, at a town hall meeting a few months back, when questioned repeatedly by concerned citizens at the town hall, was not able to address any of our issues. She said, "All I know is that they're good for fighting fires." Well, we have that accessibility, that technology available to us without having to be a national drone testing site. Like in Yosemite, the operator for the drone that was checking spots where firefighters couldn't get in was operated out of Utah. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. We have that accessibility. We don't need to be a national drone testing site to have drone operators check for fire areas, you know, in and around the area.
Yeah.
And Bill Horn, who's also a supervisor, you know, in an interview said he didn't know what they were going to be tested for. These are our representatives. We are their constituents. They should at least be able to answer these questions instead of just unanimously voting in favor, you know, for the drone testing site because it's going to bring, you know, lots of money into the area. Is it's not sufficient enough.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, our congressional representatives also were all for this. Lisa, in other states, some of the states where the testing was approved, do those states, some of them, have protections to guard against privacy, or is this a problem nationwide?
I think Arizona was definitely lacking in having any kind of legislation passed through, and I do believe that that was a factor, like San Diego, mm-hmm. you know, Southern California was.
Yeah.
New York does have some restrictions and legislation in place. And Virginia, I think it's Virginia, also has legislation in place.
What about Texas?
And Texas does as well, yeah.
Interesting.
And I think that's a factor that, you know, yes, we brought awareness to it because there was none really available to the public. And that's because on September 24th, when the county board of supervisors of San Diego, they had on their agenda that this whole drone issue was underneath, job development. And it wasn't specific to drones. And they said, there was no public input. Well, no one knew. I mean, if it's under job growth without any of the specifics behind it.
Yeah, you're not going to go hunting for that.
It's pretty misleading.
Very interesting point, Lisa. So I understand your group has a celebration plan for this victory.
We do. I mean, we pulled ourselves together in such a short period of time and really worked hard, you know, on contacting Congress and also inviting the FAA, Next Generation, Inc. Leocorn, all of the major players, mm-hmm. you know, for San Diego County, up to Riverside County, and all the way to the border, law enforcement. We invited all of them to participate in our public forums to give us their perspective, you know, to shine a positive light, you know, on the drone industry. And they all unanimously declined to participate. Yeah.
Very
interesting. That's unfortunate.
we'll look forward to hearing more about this in the future. It looks like we're not going to be a drone testing site, but certainly we'll want to keep an eye on what happens in Washington, D.C. and Sacramento to see, once the testing phase is over in these other states, whether we get rules in place to protect the privacy of residents before drones are deployed for the various uses that they have.
Drones are already deployed. Drones are already flying around San Diego County. They're already here. We're just not in the testing site.
I see.
That doesn't mean that testing isn't taking place and that drones aren't already integrated. You know, the AMC, the American movie cinema industry, put a lot of pressure on Barack Obama back in 2012 to be able to pass regulations so they were able to use drones. I mean, the industry is here to stay.
I was going to ask where.
And there's no getting away from that.
What kind of drones do we have flying here in San Diego that you're aware of?
Well, we have commercial drones. The real estate developers are using drones for marketing.
Mm.
We have the hobbyists that are using drones without really any kind of regulation. The FAA tried to...
Are these the small ones that are regulated essentially the same as model airplanes, which is a little different than, say, the large airplane-sized ones that have been used in Iraq, something on that scale?
Anyone can get a drone.
Yeah.
You can get a drone tomorrow. I can get a drone tomorrow.
Sure.
And actually, I would like to have a drone. you know, I mean, the technology is pretty nifty. It's just that there's no regulations yet set around it. There was one case where the FAA versus Trappy, which was about like hobbyist drones, and the FAA tried to enforce really old legislation from 2007 that basically didn't stick, right? So, you know, the hobbyist, my neighbor or myself right now could fly a drone over, you know, the residents' homes, you know, here and around the area or over the high school or the middle school or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can legally do that because, you know, like with the press, we have freedom of speech and
right.
expression and, you know, we're able to capture things
sure.
on our cell phones. So,
I could get one.
There's no laws in place, really, to strictly enforce the use of these drones. But then, of course, there's the military drones, which they can fly the drones. And as the largest manufacturers of drones in the world,
Can you give me an example of what type of regulation, if any, you would like to see on these personal use drones that currently are completely unregulated, the hobbyist type drones?
Well, the hobbyist drones aren't really being regulated. Like I said, you could go onto Amazon right now and buy a drone.
I mean, should there be if I want to fly one over my neighbor?
You have to register it.
If someone wants to fly it over their neighbor's backyards and take pictures in the windows, do you think that's okay? Or do you think that some limitations on what you can do with these is appropriate?
I think limitations are definitely appropriate. And I think that eventually what will happen and what's supposed to happen is that there's supposed to be a registration policy. Who owns these drones? But right now, like I said, if anyone can get a drone and there's no regulations in place and no licensing procedure or training procedure, you know, on how they're supposed to be used, like, for example, law enforcement, they're very eager to get drones. And some of them
sure.
in San Diego County already do have drones. In fact, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department has several Freedom of Information Act requests against them for not producing information about the purchasing of drones.
They've admitted that they were pricing them at one time, considering buying one. Whether they've actually done so or not, who knows?
Well, that's just it. I mean, we don't know, right, if they did or not. And they're not willing to give up that information. And they said that they don't have to, that they really are not required, because this is new technology, that they're not really required to inform the public on whether they're using drones or not, or how they're using them. Drones have great, they're very useful.
If I were lost in the wilderness, I'd want them to have one.
It's just a lack of regulations of who's using them and for what.
Right. Well, Lisa, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, and we look forward to hearing more about your group in the future.
Thank you so much, Mary, and I appreciate your time. And thank you for all your support. You've been great. You've been just been right on it the whole way through, and we so appreciate your support.
Well, that's our role as independent nonprofit media, is to provide a forum for voices that are often not heard in other media to help get those important issues out there to be heard.
It was tense outside the courtroom at the Hall of Justice on Monday the 23rd of December. Several residents of Hakamba Hot Springs were there, waiting for the court hearing when Judge Howard Shore was to determine the fate of violent sexual predator Mikael Wayne Marshall. Marshall was convicted of sex crimes when he was 17 years old and was committed to Coalinga State Hospital in 2008 as a violent predator. Before the hearing, Daniel Cook explained the fears of the community.
Well, the fears is that pedophilia is not a curable disease, and that a great many of the people that commit this act go on to commit more. And we have a lot of young boys in our community. We don't want them molested.
Once inside, Judge Shore explained that this case was unlike many other cases of this type he has heard.
It's actually ironic in that context that if there's no diagnosable mental disorder, making them a danger to the community, they're just simply dangerous, that they get released. This only applies to people with diagnosable mental disorders. So, as counterintuitive as it may seem, it's actually to a sexual offender's benefit to argue to a jury that he's not mentally disordered, he's just a bad person, and then he gets out faster. That's not the case here, but I just think that those are issues for the legislature to address, not me.
The judge went on to explain what made this case also different from many others he has heard in the past.
First of all, unlike many offenders who are predators over a substantial period of time and commit many crimes over many years, Mr. Marshall's offenses are confined to a very short period in 1994 when he was 17 years old.
Judge Shore then invited members of the audience to speak on this matter after showing a thick stack of submitted testimony. The first to speak was Supervisor Diane Jacob.
Thank you for going over the requirements of the law, and I understand that you have to follow the law. But I also have a responsibility to my constituents to be here today to tell you that I oppose this placement in Hakamba Hot Springs. There's some good reason for that. There are no services out in this area, little to none. And to continue to place these sexually violent predators in our backcountry is not only short-sighted, it's foolish, and at a lot of expense to taxpayers for the services that are required beyond what is required now. Now, this particular individual, and Judge, you indicated, was a model citizen while he was behind bars. That doesn't mean that Mr. Marshall is going to be a model citizen when he's let out.
Supervisor Jacob then went to suggest placement of Marshall at the Donovan State Prison. She was not the only one, and the judge addressed that issue with the district attorney. An example was the treatment of Matthew Hedge in 2009 at a trailer on the grounds of the prison. One of the most dramatic testimonies was that of Lori Ostrander.
One does not heal from this type of mentality, and they know how to play the system. They play it well, and just when the trust is there, they repeat their acts on a youth. I know this because I am a survivor of such sexual acts at the age of 2 until I was 14. Over the years, there has not been one day that something does not remind me of what took place in my youth. I do not want any child of any age to be preyed upon, but if you continue to release back into society these types of individuals, no child will be safe.
Chris Noland echoed her when he asked the court.
And it just seems like more and more of these people are getting put in our area. As you know, there's another placement of a predator in Campo. And that hearing is January 3rd. And again, it seems like a dumping ground for our community.
Noland also addressed the issues with safety, especially when it comes to bus stops. And he told the court,
there's not that feeling of safety anymore with this person being there in a bus stop 200, 300 feet away.
Spillman from Liberty Medical tried to explain how the supervision in this case is done. He is being released under a conditional release, and he will be wearing a GPS 24/7, as well as having a chaperone every day whenever he needs to go anywhere. Spillman also explained that Marshall needs to present a traveling log a week in advance that will or may not be approved, and he will not leave where he lives without a chaperone. Jacob told the CM that in her mind,
these are sexually violent predators. This is the worst of the worst. They've committed multiple sexual offenses, been convicted, and they have a mental disorder. Just because they've gone to prison, served their time, they've gone into a mental institution, they've gone through their five steps, and doctors say they're okay, it's not okay. What about the victims? What about the four young boys that Marshall committed crimes against? Their lives are changed forever. He deserves to be locked up for good. If he can't be, then put him on the Donovan State Prison Side.
The judge issued a continuance until January 13, since he wants to go visit the physical location. He also wants to do it when school is in session. Marshall waived his right to be present at the courtroom since he is still at the hospital. This is Nadine Abbott for East County Magazine and KNSJ.
This is Ed Barreno with a sports report for East County Magazine on KNSJ. The Bolts are in. Yes, the Chargers will have an opportunity to compete for the Super Bowl this year as the Cards remarkably fell in their favor this weekend. The playoff picture was stacked with four teams vying for the sixth seed in the AFC. With losses in the morning games by the Baltimore Ravens and Miami Dolphins, the Chargers only needed to win against the Kansas City Chiefs to secure the sixth seed. The Chiefs had already clinched the AFC's fifth seed and benched some starters for Sunday's game against the Chargers. However, it was a close game. The Chargers barely managed to hang on for overtime, as the Chiefs missed what would have been the winning kick. The kick created some controversy over a non-call by the refs, which would have led to another kick attempt. However, the Chargers went on to win in overtime by a score of 27-24. The Chargers will be playing against the Cincinnati Bengals in Cincinnati on Sunday, January 5th at 10:05 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
A flurry of new laws are slated to take effect in California in the new year. Here are some of the new laws that could affect you, your family, or your business. Minimum wage workers will get a raise in pay starting July 1st, when the minimum wage will rise by $1 an hour in California, from $8 to $9 an hour under Assembly Bill 10. If you're looking for a job, AB 556 makes it illegal for an employer to discriminate against you based on your military or veteran status under the Fair Employment and Housing Act in California. If you're a victim of stalking, your employer cannot fire you or discriminate if you take time off to appear in court on any proceeding related to the stalking issues. Similar protections are already in place for victims of domestic violence or sexual assault. Your employer must also make reasonable efforts to protect your safety, such as considering transfer, changing your schedule, assigning a new phone number, or providing locks, under Senate Bill 400. If you're a victim of a crime or you witness a crime, it's now illegal for an employer to fire you, discriminate, or retaliate against you for taking time off work to appear in court, under Senate Bill 288. However, your employer can ask for proof, such as a police report. Current law allows workers up to 6 weeks of paid family leave time to care for a seriously ill child, spouse, domestic partner, or parent, or to bond with a newborn or newly adopted child. The law is being expanded starting July 1st under Senate Bill 770 to also include caring for a seriously ill brother or sister, grandparent, grandchild, or mother or father-in-law. Employers can have their business license revoked or suspended if they retaliate against employees or others on the basis of citizenship or immigration status.
and they could be fined up to $10,000 per violation under SB 666. Medical patients can now access physical therapy treatment directly without a referral from a doctor under AB 1000. Therapy for patients who initiate their own services will be limited to no more than 12 visits or 45 calendar days, whichever is less. The law also requires a physical therapist to refer the patient to another medical provider if the patient's condition requires treatment or services beyond the therapist's scope of practice, or if the patient is not improving. You won't have to worry soon about running up millions of dollars in medical bills. SB 639 conforms California law to the Federal Affordable Care Act requirements, so any policy that takes effect or renews on January 1st or later must limit your annual deductible to $2,000 for an individual and $4,000 for families, and limit your yearly out-of-pocket total costs to $6,500 for individuals or $12,700 for families in most circumstances. If you're a minor, you can now get photos or texts that you posted online removed, thanks to SB 568. So if you don't want your would-be employers to see those wild photos taken during youthful indiscretions, you'd better ask to have them taken down before you turn 18. The new law also prohibits online and mobile application owners from marketing certain products to minors. If you threaten to report the immigration status of a person or their family member, you can now be charged with extortion under AB 524. Motorists, be aware that starting July 1st, another new law requires drivers to allow at least 3 feet when you pass a bicyclist, though there are exceptions if the road conditions are too dangerous. Smokers can no longer light up at any University of California campus since effective January 1st, the UC system has banned all tobacco products, including e-cigarettes. California State University system will consider a similar ban at its campuses this spring. Reporting for East County Magazine and KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
And next up, we bring you the White House holiday address from President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama.
This is a season for millions of Americans to be together with family, to continue long-held holiday traditions, and to show our gratitude to those we love. And along the way, some of us might even watch a little basketball or eat some Christmas cookies, too.
Here at the White House, over the past few weeks, we've had about 70,000 people from all across the country come visit and look at our holiday decorations. This year's theme was Gather Round, Stories of the Season. And in every room of the house, we try to tell the story about who we are as Americans and how we celebrate the holidays together. And we made certain to highlight some of the most powerful stories we know. The stories of our outstanding troops, veterans, and military families, and their service and sacrifice for our country.
Our extraordinary men and women in uniform are serving so that the rest of us can enjoy the blessings we cherish during the holidays. But that means many of our troops are far away from home and far from family. They're spending some extra time on the phone with their loved ones back home, or they're setting up video chats so they can watch as the presents are opened. So today we want all our troops to know that you're in our thoughts and prayers this holiday season. And here's the good news. For many of our troops and newest veterans, this might be the first time in years that they've been with their families on Christmas. In fact, with the Iraq War over and the transition in Afghanistan, fewer of our men and women in uniform are deployed in harm's way than at any time in the last decade.
And that's something that we all can be thankful for. And with more and more of our troops back here at home, now it's our turn to serve. It's our turn to step up and show our gratitude for the military families who've given us so much. And that's why Jill Biden and I started our Joining Forces initiative to rally all Americans to support our military families in ways large and small. And again, we have been overwhelmed by the response we've gotten as folks from across the country have found new ways to give back to these families through their schools, businesses, and houses of worship.
That's the same spirit of giving that connects all of us during the holidays. So many people all across the country are helping out at soup kitchens, buying gifts for children in need, or organizing food or clothing drives for their neighbors. For families like ours, that service is a chance to celebrate the birth of Christ and live out what he taught us, to love our neighbors as we love ourselves, to feed the hungry and look after the sick, to be our brother's keeper and our sister's keeper. And for all of us as Americans, regardless of our faith, those are values that can drive us to be better parents and friends, better neighbors, and better citizens.
So as we look to the new year, let's pledge ourselves to living out those values by reaching out and lifting up those in our communities who could use a hand up.
So Merry Christmas, everyone. And from the two of us, as well as Malia, Sasha, Grandma, Bo,
and Sonny, the newest Obama,
we wish you all a blessed and safe holiday season.
Happy holidays, everybody, and God bless.
Residents in Alpine are pulling together to help a young couple whose home on Arnold Way was destroyed by a fire on Christmas Eve. Shara Halverson and her boyfriend, Sean Barrett, were away visiting friends when their home caught fire. They have no renter's insurance and lost almost everything in the flames, though they are grateful for small miracles. A jewelry box that belonged to Shara's grandmother survived the blaze, as did an ammonite fossil given to her by a friend, and most special of all, a love letter that she wrote to Sean when they first fell in love. "That's what really matters," she told our news partner, 10 News. But the couple can't afford a new place to live, let alone replacing all that was lost. The Alpine Community Network reports that community members hope to give the young couple a new beginning. People wishing to donate items to help Shara and Sean can drop off items at the Chic Boutique in Alpine. Items needed include pillows, blankets, dog beds, toiletries, small appliances such as a rice cooker or a crock pot, and clothing. Shara wears a size 3 or 5 in clothing and shoe size 8. Sean wears a 32 to 34 small or medium shirt and has size 10 shoes. Sean also lost his computer and a guitar that he hopes to replace. A PayPal account has been set up at trueshara@gmail.com. That's trueshara@gmail.com. And questions can be sent to Shara's sister at sunnystyle@gmail.com. That's sonniestyle@gmail.com. Members of the Alpine Community Network have pitched in to offer furnishings, including a sofa, table, and chairs, hoping to brighten the holiday for this young couple in need.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. It's the holiday season here in Southern California, and memories of Christmas past keep bubbling up along with the champagne. Up and down the West Coast, even over the northern border into British Columbia, the weather tended to be kinder and gentler, just like now. The older we get, the more we think back to those childhood Christmases. So here we go, back to once upon a time. On the eve of St. Nicholas, I am inevitably reminded of those Christmases decades ago, when Victoria, British Columbia was filled with carolers, holly wreaths, punch bowls, and secrets. We children prayed for snow in that mild climate, pleading with the Almighty to at least send clouds and drizzle, the better to make the Christmas houses even cozier and merrier. Resolutely, we shut our eyes to the multiple Santa Clauses dotting the street corners. We knew that only one, the true bestower of rewards, because of course we were perfect children, and bestower of loot, would crash about in the chimney, consume the brandy and fruitcake left for him, then depart with Donner and Blitzen, leaving a trail of marvelous, knobby packages in his wake. For my father, Christmas meant extra work at his dairy, which was also well-staffed with many Italian immigrants. He used to deliver milk on a wagon pulled by a brown horse aptly dubbed Brownie. My brother and I took turns on December weekends, aiding with the delivery of eggnog, whipping cream, butter, and ice cream. Everything was real then. Everything was fattening. It also felt so strange to rise before dawn, eat huge bowls of oatmeal, pack immense ham sandwiches, then drive away in the dark and silent dawn. When we sat on Brownie, a benumbed individual in a straw hat, whose leaden saunter belied, I was sure, a heart of fire, his sole reaction was a doleful gaze over one shoulder. Yet we felt daring and powerful to be seated so far from the ground, and our hearts leapt up when Brownie shifted position, or, as we later described it to school chums, leaped and galloped forward while we hung on for dear life. Along the milk route, mothers used to give us cookies and tell us we were responsible children. Their own children turned green with envy as we strode past, clinking bottles for effect, and intoning, "Here's your extra order, Mrs. Robinson." Father used to whisper the customers' names to us as we approached, so we could give things a personal touch. But when we got to Con Maggiore's house, Father would break into the Toreador song from Carmen, giving it his best tenor tremolo. Con's bass would boom from the kitchen, and they'd finish the chorus together on the back stoop, waving eggnog aloft to the delight of the urchins, who instantly gathered. Every year at Christmas, the dairy company threw a huge party for the employees and their families. This bacchanal was always held in the Knights of Pythias Hall, which was full of huge, brass-studded leather chairs and crepe-papered tables loaded with edibles. We never, ever saw any Pythian knights and kept wondering when we'd hear the clank of armor. We never dreamed that somebody's portly father, sitting next to us in the hall, paper plate on knee, was such a legendary creature. As we grew older, my sisters and I would entertain with song and dance, invariably noting brats that we were, that we compared very favorably to the other performers in the talent show. But I recall one disastrous number. Mother dressed me in a baggy gown and stuffed it fore and aft with pillows, so I would resemble a prototype opera singer. Clutching a picture of an unshaven, cigar-chomping sergeant, I sang My Hero from The Chocolate Soldier in ringing falsetto tones to show I was an old-fashioned, whooping crane-type singer. But nobody in the audience knew what was so funny, and neither did I, so I exited to thundering silence. I was 13 and crushed. Various dairymen, who were good sports, took turns every Christmas being Santa Claus. One evening, Father told us he'd been chosen for the role. He loved this sort of thing. On the big day, Father's arrival from the North Pole was signaled by mad jingling of bells, and all the children at the party began shrieking with excitement. Throughout the gift-giving ceremony, he kept up a steady stream of jolly prattle as each child hurtled forward for a package. As we approached, there were elaborate winks from other parents as Father rumbled, "Now, who can this be?" Everybody got a mesh stocking filled with whistles and yo-yos. Boys received leather stamping sets or dump trucks. Girls got embroidery sets, wash me, spank me, change me dollies, or weaving sets, advising us to make a sampler, just like mother's, who had never made one in her life. But I dreaded the abruptness of ending it all the day after Christmas. The grand festival had arrived and departed in a trice, and all we could do was grow a bit older. It was all so funny and silly and amateur and affectionate. but it bred whimsy and fancy in our souls, that same fancy that prompts children to think a chair, a locomotive, an old curtain, a trailing court dress, or a man in a red flannel suit, the real Santa Claus. It is the part that is the essence of play. It is easily damaged, as all precious things are. Each Christmas, one hopes that the child in us will survive the commercial onslaught and retain not the material trappings, but the meaning of the rituals for everyone, no matter who, no matter where. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
It's the season for peace and goodwill toward men, but one out of every eight people in our world goes to bed hungry every night. Yet, the world actually produces enough food to feed all of the 7 billion people on Earth. So why are so many going hungry? Some people living in poverty can't afford to buy enough food for their families or themselves. So many children are malnourished. Some countries lack agricultural infrastructure such as roads and irrigation. Natural disasters such as floods, storms, and drought are increasing, causing food shortages. Wars have displaced millions of people, and some fields have been contaminated. Yet a third of all food produced is wasted and never even consumed, 1.3 billion tons. This food wastage represents a missed opportunity to improve global food security in a world where 1 in 8 people is hungry. The United Nations World Food Program has a hunger quiz. For every person who takes that quiz, a hungry child will be fed. You can take the quiz at quiz.fwp.org. That's quiz.fwp.org. And if you want to know more about hunger and what you can do about it, go to wfp.org/hunger. This is East County Magazine's Capital Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. Long-term unemployment benefits expired on Saturday after Congress failed to authorize an extension. People who have been out of work for 6 months or longer will no longer be receiving unemployment checks. About 1.3 million Americans lose benefits immediately, including 222,000 people in California. By the end of 2014, it's estimated that almost 5 million people will lose unemployment benefits. Those checks range from $40 to $450 a week, depending on what people were earning before, so this is a major blow for individuals who may have no other source of income. The New York Times reports that removing this safety net for unemployed workers will push hundreds of thousands of households below the poverty line. With the cutoff, only one out of every four unemployed Americans will receive jobless benefits. That's the lowest proportion in half a century. Though the rate of joblessness nationally has fallen to about 7%, U.S. Secretary of Labor Thomas Perez says it's taking longer for people to find jobs nowadays than in the past. Back when unemployment extensions were first approved, when George W. Bush was president, it took an average of 17 weeks for an unemployed person to find a job. Today, it takes 36 weeks. That's over twice as long. California has offered 63 weeks of unemployment benefits during the recession, but now all states, including California, will drop to a maximum of just 26 weeks of benefits, 6 months, for all unemployed people. Democrats in Washington have sought a temporary extension of benefits for the long-term unemployed, but Republicans in the House of Representatives have refused to extend those benefits. Those opposed to the extension say it's too costly at $25 billion and that extending benefits provides a crutch that could stop people from looking for work. Those who support extending benefits say the problem isn't that recipients are lazy, but that jobs are simply hard to find. Supporters also argue that long-term unemployment benefits not only provide a safety net for families in need, but also spur the economy, since recipients spend the money on goods and services, while cutting off unemployment benefits would slow economic recovery. In San Diego, there were nearly 110,000 unemployed people here in November, the most recent month for which data is available. That's down from 133,000 about a year ago. But in portions of East County, the rate is much higher, and among Iraqi Chaldean immigrants in El Cajon, for example, the unemployment rate remains about 60%. Coming on the heels of cuts in the food stamp program known as SNAP, or Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, the complete cutoff of unemployment funds for people who've been out of work a long time is an even harder blow. These cuts are also likely to lead to a rise in homelessness, a troubling prospect. A new survey by the U.S. Conference of Mayors found deep concern about both hunger and homelessness among the mayors surveyed. In the cities that were surveyed, 20% of people who needed food assistance last year did not receive it, and over three-fourths of cities had to cut the amount of food available for the hungry due to lack of resources. One in every five homeless people who needed assistance didn't receive it last year, and lack of beds caused emergency shelters in 71% of the cities surveyed to turn away homeless families with children. Eliminating unemployment benefits for millions of out-of-work Americans is expected to increase hunger, homelessness, and hopelessness among our nation's poor.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Maness of the Maness Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new EVA wine growing district. Welcome to the radio show. As the 2013 year comes to a close and winter chill now begins to settle in across the county, I thought it might be a cool idea to share with you some amazing things that have happened this year in the Vines and Wines movement versus our normal interview with amazing upcoming winemakers. Even though belts continue to be tightened and more families and friends are reconnecting to be resourceful, we still need to be thankful for many things that I'd like to share with you. We've all been ever so blessed to live right here in the East County. This is an amazing area. And with the new boutique winery ordinances now in place, allowing smaller families the opportunity to plant, grow, and make wine, have tastings, and sell their wine to the public with easier permit processes, things are definitely looking up. This year, we must also be thankful to our grassroots organizations, like the San Diego Amateur and Professional Winemaker Societies, the East County Vintners, and splinter groups, like the Mount Helix Growers Association and local colleges from Rancho San Diego to San Marcos, now conducting viticulture classes that actually continue to hammer out the infrastructure of our rising new industry, encouraging novice growers to get on board, man. People's buckets lists are definitely getting smaller these days as they begin to educate themselves with internet help and plant their dreams. One day all of these groups may be able to form a new supergroup for total information that we can all share and learn from here in San Diego. I thought of a cool name. Maybe it should be known as VSD, or what do you think about Vino San Diego? Anyway, as these vineyards continue to expand across the county, grown by home and professional winemakers, they're racking up bronze, silver, and gold medals at local wine judging events in cities like Del Mar and La Jolla by the Sea. With stellar efforts, really, in such a short period of time. This is absolutely amazing and great news for America's finest city, for soon tourists will no longer need to travel up to Temecula or Napa or even Santa Barbara to enjoy dynamic regional wine that's grown right here, here in a myriad of microclimates that create wonderful grape growing. Time slips away from each of us each and every day, before our very own eyes. Remember the little sleepy horse town of Ramona? Well, it's now grown to over 35 bonded wineries and tasting rooms with delicious wines, and they're putting people back to work, influencing other little towns like Potrero, Campo, Descanso, Del Zurra, Alpine, Julian, and even my little town of Jamul to follow suit along the historic 94 corridor. It seems to be quite in vogue nowadays to get your hands dirty, dump your gym memberships, and plant a vineyard to regain your sanity and physical prowess back. It sure reconnects you to the earth, increasing your property value and lowering your water bill at the same time. So why not? Well, one thing is definitely for certain that we have learned this year. We must all remain diligent, educated, and inspired, working together with a glass that remains half full. While we're here, working together to stay on the right track, it will leave behind a legacy of amazing people, stories, healthy vineyards, and mountains and I mean mountains of wonderful wine grapes that can be crushed and fermented into precious sips of wine. Let it be known that if high-end grapes are grown locally, the best winemakers in the world will come here, like magnets to steel. This comes from Greg Manis. That's my quote. Another blessing coming our way is the California Farm Stay Initiative, allowing small farm and vineyard owners the opportunity to have guests stay overnight for visits with minimal licensing permits. Imagine horseback riding as you hop from vineyard to vineyard, sipping precious sips of wine under aged oak trees. Well, it's already happening here, my friends, in San Diego, the beautiful East County. So the next time you're visiting some of these up-and-coming East County vineyards, shake their hand and say a warm thank you for all they're starting to grow right in your own backyard. And hopefully, a little bit at a time, one season after the next, we will all begin to slowly realize that our glasses were never half empty this year, but have remained half full, and the best is still yet to come. As our wine journey continues to unravel, these are amazing gifts we can all build and share together. I'm Greg Manis of Manis Vineyards Designs. Thanks for tuning in today. With all of us working together, turning vines into amazing wines, dreams really can come true for all of us. So cheers, and here's to the rich goodness of sharing new beginnings.
The Halo Community Foundation has been established just in time for a holiday gift or gift year-round to help people in need in our community, Visiting Angels has announced. The mission of the Halo Community Foundation is to provide quality in-home care to low-income individuals suffering from illnesses, disabilities, or other physical impairments. The Visiting Angels East County office can assist low-income individuals to receive critical in-home care for a better quality of life. The foundation provides care to qualified people based on needs and income level free of charge. In-home care is costly, and many individuals on fixed incomes can't afford the proper care, resulting in falls, accidents, decreased mobility, or even death. In addition, caring for a family member can be stressful and put a strain on family members not equipped with the training to properly care for their loved one. The Halo Community Foundation relies on private donations from individuals, businesses, and community organizations to provide this critical service. For more information, you can call 619-357-7626. See Visiting Angels at visitingangels.org. You can also get detailed information at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Just put Halo Foundation into the search term there.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
The Barona Band of Mission Indians is ending 2013 on a high note by awarding another education grant to a deserving local school. The program's most recent $5,000 grant was presented by Councilwomen Beth Glasgow and Bonnie LaChapa to Hill Creek Elementary School in Santee, fulfilling important educational resources on both students' and faculty's holiday wish lists. State Senator Joel Anderson nominated Hill Creek Elementary for the grant. Hill Creek Elementary will use the funds to purchase much-needed technology for K-8 grade students, including 10 Tech for Learning licenses and 4 licenses for Read Naturally. The grant will also equip classrooms with 3 computing stations, a Dell desktop computer, and 9 LED monitors, keyboards, and mouse sets. Clifford LaChapa, chairman of the Barona Band of Mission Indians, stated, "The Barona tribe is thrilled to present this education grant during this season of giving, and we wish all of the teachers and students happy holidays. We are looking forward to awarding many more grants to deserving schools like Hill Creek Elementary in 2014. Since 2006, the Barona Band of Mission Indians has awarded over $2 million to more than 400 schools statewide to help bridge school budget gaps and share resources through its Barona Education Grant Program. The program is the first of its kind in California, created and administered by a tribal government. The goal of the program is to create strong educational opportunities for the children of California, building upon the success of the Barona Indian Charter School, which operates under a continuous improvement model. Schools throughout California can apply for educational grants from Barona to purchase much-needed supplies and materials that promote academic improvement." Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.